Three of Hearts is a podcast of queer joy and silly laughs coupled with sad people and grave danger. Content warnings can be found in the episode description. Previously on Three of Hearts. Agents Vellum and Felspar, along with their friends, fled Governor Thorne and her Bramble Guard on their way out of Cindershore. They were aided by Vellum's Uncle Grey, who is working with Thorne, but angry that she put Vellum at risk. Grey is further upset by Thorne going after Suits and, by extension, Jack Spade. With additional aid from Merafina and Sorrel, everyone was able to get on boats bound safely for Clovenheart. The Felspar family had a private conversation in their own boat, where Brunhilde revealed a secret that had been weighing on her for some time. Tara Felspar, Spar's mother, was the mortal manifestation of the goddess Thaumatera.
You're in a boat. Brunhilde is like searching for words after she's just revealed that your mom was the avatar of Thaumatera.
I think Spar looks at Sorrel and is like, did you know?
She shakes her head. She's like, no. No, I never suspected. I mean, that's a wild thing to suspect. It kind of makes sense, I guess. I mean, she always had a thing for Thaumatera. I don't know how any of this works. I mean, I did a little research on mortal avatars, and they don't know that they're gods until they do. So, I don't know. I mean, it's not like... It's pretty obvious now that I think about it, like, when Mom realized, but... Oh, my God. And she just, like, kind of, like, lays on against Spar's hand. And she's just like, did you know?
Is she asking Spar?
Yeah.
And so it's like, look, I most days I forget that goddesses even exist. This isn't me. I don't do these things until recently, I guess. I mostly
think about them to curse them. Like, I say, I'm glad that Mom's not one of the ones that. And you can tell Sorrel's just like rambling to like not really process this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's like, you know, when I'm late for work, you know, I curse Kronosava, or like when the bus is late, I curse the gambler, or when I see a cute girl but I don't know how to talk to her, I curse Nurashava. But normally I don't like really think about them either, and I don't even necessarily think that I never knew how much I thought they were real, I guess.
Well, Kronosava's kind of a dick, so don't feel bad about that one.
I can't begin to wonder how you know that. And Lunavella's like, oh, he talked to them. He's very popular.
Spar makes a face, or like in many other contexts, this would be like a wink finger guns moment. Mm-hmm. But like there's a lot of weirdness going on, and it's his aunt, and everybody, at least Spar's got to be going on something like 30 hours without sleep.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think he just looks at Brunhilde and is like, what does this mean for us? And he like kind of gestures at him and Sorrel, and is like, the question is like, as children of a goddex, ? And then there's the further question of like, he's a blood relation, mm-hmm, to Tara, mm-hmm, and Sorrel isn't, but Merafina found Spar like using Sorrel's hair, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And so like, obviously, yeah, like, yeah, he's always considered them siblings, full stop, right? Like,
right.
She was adopted before he was born, so she's always been family, and like,
right,
it would not be surprising if magic doesn't work through bloodlines but works through family lines.
Yeah. Brunhilde says, I spent a long time trying to figure that out myself. I talked to a lot of my old friends from the university in Dustdale, and nobody it's hard to track that much information about these avatars because they don't know for most of their lives. And a lot of people have claimed to be avatars falsely. And there's not really documented instances of them having kids, because once they realize they're gods, they usually don't remain all that interested in, like, being immortal and, like, raising a family and stuff. So this might be a unique situation. I don't know, and I've really tried to know. You know, I've read parenting books, but they don't have parenting books for this. And I don't wish I knew. I wish I knew. But you look at that sword, right? Like, that's something, and I don't know if that's like Tara did that or if you did that because you're her son. I really don't know. I wish I knew. I've been wondering pretty much every day for the last 20 odd years.
I think she did it for me.
That makes sense. You know, she didn't want me to tell y'all because she didn't want you to feel like you were living in this impossible shadow, but I feel like that ship sailed a long time ago. Does Spar actually laugh at that?
Yeah, I was going to say, that was an essay laugh, but I think Spar does laugh. It's like a more tired chuckle, yeah. A little bit bleaker, but yeah, no, he does. Mm-hmm. He does laugh.
And she says, yeah, I told her that y'all were going to find out, frankly. And, you know, well, I think, you know, that was inevitable, whether I tell you or not. I guess, do y'all have questions?
I think that was my question, is what does this mean? And if we don't know, then...
I mean, yeah, Luna said you talked to a god tonight.
Spar makes a sort of like, motion.
So it seems to mean some things. And I mean, I wish I could give you a more concrete explanation than, well, your life's going to be weird and weird magic stuff's going to happen to you, I guess. But, you know, surprise, adulthood is just figuring out that your parental figures know just as little as you do. And this is a prime example of that.
Spar looks at Sorrel. So have you had any weird godic stuff happen to you lately?
She puts her hand on her chin and says, lately, no. I mean, I try to stay away from situations that could become magical these days. I mean, I was really adept at magic, but that could just be, you know, I'm pretty cool. So I can't say with certainty. I mean, okay, there is something, and I never knew if I was just making this up. And she puts her hand on a necklace that she has, and it's like a chain necklace that actually was a bracelet for Tara. And she says, I don't know, sometimes when I'm, like, making decisions, like, I have, like, a hard choice to make, like, whether to follow my brother on a dangerous mission in Clovenheart and take off days from work, stuff like that. Like, when I think a certain answer, I feel the necklace, like, get warm, and I know that's the right answer. And I always thought that was, like, a, you know, not a psychosomatic thing, because it's more of a psychothaumaturgic thing. Scott, I'm sure there's a better word for it. But it might be a mom thing, now that I know this. That's it.
So, I guess, what should I know about Thaumatera? I never paid a ton of attention in Godic's class. That wasn't really my thing.
Sorrel says, you know, they were a relatively minor codex. I mean, are a relatively minor codex. They weren't really very worshipped. I don't think people fully understood that our magic came from a godex, not on a wide scale, until the Untethering. And, you know, Thaumaterra made a bit, basically agreed to talk to Jasper and Arabella and all of them and said, like, okay, I'm going to turn off the magic, but it's no take-backsies. And they did that. And then they untethered themselves from our world entirely. So I'm afraid if there's anything more to learn about Thaumaterra, I don't know that we ever will, because they're gone. When Sorrel says it, like, she can feel it, and you can feel it, and you guys can feel that each other feels it. That, like, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And Brynhilda kind of continues and says, I just, you know, I've been sitting on this for so long, and I feel like y'all have a right to know sort of what happened that night that they left. And I just want you both to know that, I don't know if I've told you this before, but that it was a really, really, really hard decision. And your mom had this revelation that she could essentially perform what we now call the Untethering on just Josepha and just Merrim, Veracity. And that they would no longer be connected to magic at all, and they would be broken from Morpholomew's control. But the amount of power that it would need would be godly. And then she realized that she was a god. And the moment she realized that, she started remembering what it was like to be a god, and was less and less terror by the hour, and it scared her. And she felt like she had to act fast if she wanted to still have that part of herself that even cared about saving Josepha. And you know, it was a scary thing, and I don't know if... I guess we can't play these ifs, but I don't know if your mom would have chosen to even go if she was still all herself. I really don't. But it's a game of ifs that I guess is pointless to play, because if she was still herself, then she wouldn't have had the power to do it in the first place. But that's the short of it, and I just... I guess wanted to say that to you for a long time. I know it's a lot.
I think Spar is sitting with his knees drawn up to his chest and, like, Sorrel sitting on one of his knees.
Mm-hmm.
And there just isn't anything else he can do with this information. I think he finds himself, like, looking at Sorrel. Like, not necessarily to take the... He's looking at Sorrel, like, to take the lead. He's looking at Sorrel for cues.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, 10% because she's the person who knows about magic, and 90% because she's still his big sister.
Right.
And, like, she was older enough that she has more and stronger memories of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And to him, they mostly exist as photographs.
Right.
And so... But it's definitely a lot of it is like looking to her because Sorrel's in charge.
Mm-hmm. Sorrel's going to, like, stand on her tippy toes and, like, kiss Spar on, like, the chin cheeky area.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, you know, in a way, this makes a lot of sense because Mom and I kind of fought a lot when I got older. Spar would know that, like, what Sorrel had told Velum, like, earlier in the series, like, that her really wanting to undergo biomancy was, like, a point of contention in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And said, but I always admired her so much, and not just because she was really good at magic and I wanted to be really good at magic, but just because she was... You know, she had this confidence, like, she could do anything. even before she knew that she probably could do anything. And, you know, I don't think that was Thaumatera. I think that was just Terra. I think it was just, you know, a person who was amazing and someone who, you know, knew that not everyone was brave enough to act and do what needs to be done, so she took it upon herself to do it. And I don't think that her being a god takes away from how impressive of a person she was. And, you know, she was no less our mother, right? Like, just because she was a lot more. Every parent is more than a parent, right? Ours is just a lot more.
Spar, who knows things about parenting, definitely nods. You may recognize this look on his face from when he was 7 and learning about, like, Thaumaterical laws of physics. Like, mm-hmm. Yes, yes, that,
The only thing she says, and then the next thing she says is, the only thing I really know for sure at this time is that every day I'm kind of pissed at Thaumatera for leaving us, and now that just really took on a whole other level. And she kind of slumps onto your knee and says, sorry, I'm not supposed to be the big sibling, but I'm at a loss here too.
Spar sort of cups his hand around her to so she can lean into it.
She does.
He's like, well, I guess I'm going to feel real weird about praying for a while.
And Sorrel looks at you and, like, cocks an eyebrow and is like, when's the last time you prayed, Merim Felspar?
He goes to check his watch, does some math, and it's like 8 hours ago.
She, like, kind of nods and is like, you think you know a person?
He jerks his chin at Luna and is like, look, take it up with the person who summoned the god. I was just there minding my own business, having an out-of-body experience.
Sorrel looks between everybody and is like, I gotta get out of the house more.
Oh, on the topic of that.
Uh-huh.
You might want a new job.
I mean, that's true. But why?
Well, the governor did threaten your job as a way to sort of get me to go along with her plan. But then it turns out she might be evil. We might have to fight her and or topple her regime. Plan's currently unclear. I think you might want to look into a move to a more stable sector. Unfortunately, Suits is not hiring at the moment.
That was the next question. She's like, damn, I was thinking with Vellum clearly cut out to be a field agent, there might be a desk opportunity available to me.
Well, if we become unbanded, then, you know, I will put in an excellent reference for you.
Oh, well, that sucks. Well, you know, I know a great little town where you don't have to have a job.
You know, I hear weird stuff keeps happening there. I wonder if they could use a semi-retired detective.
Sorrel says, like, I can be like your mysterious secretary.
I've always wanted one of those.
She says, all right, I'll have to get better at looking off into the distance knowingly. Like, I see something there that other people can't or refuse to.
You could ask Cowlin for lessons.
Whoa! Oh, snap.
That's Sorrel, like, bolt eyes bulge as we cut away to the intro.
Thank you.
welcome to the intro. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. It's been a lot of talking, but it's been dramatic talking, which is our favorite kind here. I'm Jordan Quiverns. I'm your host. I've been in a lot of the show so far. I'm actually always in the show. And I play mostly everyone. My pronouns are they, them, and you can find me on Twitter at Jordan Quiverns.
What's a fun fact about an NPC or about the world?
Oh, that's a great question, Essay. Our fun fact for today is that in the boat that contains Jakob, Anya, Josepha, and Carnation, Jakob is asking Anya and Josepha questions about what Sbar was like as a child, and that the reason he is doing this is that he wants to throw Sbar a really embarrassing birthday party where he, like, decorates it with, like, stuff Sbar would have been interested in as a child.
And I thought they were friends.
Uh-huh.
You think you know a person?
Mm-hmm.
Jakob thinks it'll be cute.
I mean, it will be.
I hear I have co-hosts.
You do. Hi, my name is Essay. I use she, her. I play Merrim Felspar, who uses he, him. You can find me online on Tumblr as of this recording, although, you know, the internet's sort of the Wild West, so who knows. I'm at Citrus and Salt, which will be linked in the episode description. My fun fact for today is that Sbar has at least once won Cadwin's desk off of him in a game of cards.
Yes.
More than once by cheating.
Wow. Well done.
Good.
I can't imagine Cadwin's hard to deceive in a game of cards.
Yeah. He
depends on how drunk he is.
Which is always. Yes. The answer is yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No, the answer is how much.
Yes.
That's important. That's good to know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. This is Ila Alexi. I play Agent Cowlin Vellum. He and I both use they and he pronouns. You can find me on most social medias at Ila Alexi, including Tumblr. Just started getting back on there. The podcast is also on Tumblr at Three Hearts Cast.
Yeah, I mostly use that one, but I'm there too. I'm also on Tumblr. Tumblr's the new cool place.
It is for us anyway.
Uh-huh.
This week's Agent Vellum fact. The first time that Vellum met future Agent Ace Harland was in the middle of being kidnapped.
Oh!
They were attempting to force Vellum into a car or, you know, some other vehicle. And Ace stumbled into them. He had a bad head cold at the time, but he still rushed in to help.
I have an important question, Ila.
Yeah?
What did Ace look like?
You see, I was picturing this is like the one time when Ace looks actually like himself, but he is also sick.
Okay, fun.
So he still feels miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Half the time while he was fighting these baddies, he wasn't even looking at what he was fighting because his eyes were too scrunched up from sneezing.
Aww.
And also from the brain fog. But he still managed to beat them up, and Vellum offered him a job at Suits, you know, once he started feeling better.
Incredible.
So there you go. That is equal parts Vellum and Ace facts today, I guess.
Yeah. Do you think any of the enemies were repelled by Ace's sneeze?
Probably at least a couple were like, ew.
Yeah, like kind of germaphobes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Well, now you know a little bit more about our characters, and we're gonna get back to the podcast. I hope you'll join us. This is not how I end intros.
It is now.
now in the boat with Velum, Tatiana, Ishbala, and Merafina. And Velum, you are super high on cherry coke.
Unless you don't want to be. I feel like it could be a really a quick high and then a come down. Like, I would not be surprised if it wears off over the course of the trip.
Yes, we can also do a flip to determine that also, depending on how you're feeling.
Sure, we'll do a flip.
Okay, give me brawn biology.
Brawn is 2, biology is 4. Gotta mark down all my things. 2 for brawn, 4 for biology, 1 for healthy, 1 for eclectic. We got a queen and a jack.
Okay, so not queen of hearts?
No, queen of spades.
Okay, there were 2 successes. I'll say over the course of the first 70% of the trip, you're kind of conked out. And the gentle lulling of the rocking of the boat pulled by Mulchers just so gently and evenly kind of helps you reach an inner equilibrium that mellows you out. You awake to Tatiana just way too close to your face.
Oh,
hi.
Can I help you?
Yeah, I was making sure you were alive. There was some speculation.
I appreciate the concern. I was just a tad sleepy.
And Merafina says, Miss Almafuego was the only one who was speculating. We could see you breathing clearly.
Okay. Yeah, that tracks. You know, I did wonder for a second if she was going in for a kiss.
Tatiana resumes her seat and says, I would never kiss someone who didn't want it, and I couldn't ask you. I mean, again, never again. Or for the first time.
Good. Yep. Consent is sexy.
Mm-hmm. I've always said that.
Good.
Whether she's adhered to it is a whole other question. Anyways, she says, so how you feeling? You know, do you feel okay? I am, I'm not a licensed doctor. I'm not even a licensed animal doctor, but I know some things about some mammals.
Good.
So I might be able to be of use.
I feel okay. You know, the cherry coke definitely gave me some endorphins and adrenaline and sugar, and then it crashed and I took a little nap. Probably a good idea to get a check-in with Josepha maybe when we make it there. But yeah, feeling all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Hold on 1 second. She reaches into, she has like...
If she pulls out a syringe, I swear to God, Jordan.
No! No. She had an opportunity and didn't take it.
She would never.
She... yeah, okay. Fair. she has like a little, like, almost like a pencil holder, like, type bag. And inside are like a bunch of like little vials, and they're labeled with the names of various drugs on them. She says, these aren't drugs. These are the remedies I use to come down and avoid hangover from various drugs.
Oh, okay.
This has definitely gotten Spar into trouble in the past.
Oh, no.
And she hands you the one labeled cherry coke.
Okay. Can I flip something to see if Velum recognizes anything about it? Like if the consistency looks right, or if it smells right, or if it just smells like cherry coke?
Yeah, I think that's intelligence biology.
All right. So that is 4 for biology, 4 for intelligence, 1 for healthy, and 1 for body and mind.
Holy moly.
All right. Oh, good. We have a jack of diamonds, a ace of hearts, and a joker.
Okay, wonderful. For that, I think you are confident that it's not cherry coke, but you don't know what it is, and it smells really bad.
All right. I think he will take it and hold on to it.
For a rainy day.
And not drink it.
All right, can you add, like, Cherry Coke Remedy, like, in quotes to your character sheet somewhere?
All right. You know, this could be interesting to study later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You notice, like, this whole time that Tati's been talking to you, like, Ishbala's kind of looking outside the boat. Tati says, oh, yeah, by the way, Ishbala wanted to talk to you. She kept trying, but you were, like, awake for, like, a second, and then you would say something about, like, hamster wheels, and then you fall back asleep. It was very confusing. Were you having a hamster-based dream?
I have no idea. I don't remember.
Okay.
Those Cherry Coke dreams, you can never remember them the moment you're awake.
Well, actually, if you drink that, you could.
Oh.
Yeah, and it might actually be frighteningly vivid. You might make it confused with your own memories. Anyway,
Oh. I see.
Now that's gotten Spar into trouble.
I'm glad that I know that now.
Yeah. she pulls out a little, like, laminated, like, 2x4, like, little piece of paper, and she's like, oh yeah, this is a list of side effects for my various concoctions.
Oh. Okay, so like a little note card, not like a 2x4 wooden plaque.
Oh, not, yeah, sorry, inches.
Yes, okay. Okay. Yeah, Vellum would love to read that. What are some of the other side effects?
The other side effects include changing of eye colors, in parentheses, temporary, seeing new colors.
Temporary?
Yeah, temporary.
Okay.
And, like, altering your sense of taste, and in parentheses, indeterminate length of time.
Okay.
By sense of taste, does she mean, like, sweet, sour, or does she mean, like, I'm not into blondes anymore?
Maybe both.
Maybe both. Yeah, we don't know.
We can't tell a Tati.
Yeah. There's no elaboration.
He'll just tuck that into the same pocket.
Okay.
Agent Ishbala, was there something you wanted to talk about?
And Tati's like, just warning you, like, whenever someone wants to smooch Bar, she, like, is super judgy. And then Ishbala says, only when they are putting him at risk of losing his job and or going to jail. Which... arguably, Vellum's already done, but that's different.
Yeah, they've literally been in jail, and his job is, like, definitively lost. By that metric, Vellum is the worst possible partner.
And Ishbala says, look, this is not even about Spar at all. I just wanted to say...
it's not?
No, 0% about Spar.
Okay. You just wanted to say...
I just wanted to say, you know, I kind of used to think... you were a weirdo, child of privilege, nerd, who didn't really, like, know how to talk to people. And I still think a lot of that is true, but...
a lot of it is true.
I mean, you've been pretty badass as long as I've been with you, and I gotta respect that. And I'm almost positive I overheard that you're actually the founder of Suits.
Yes, I am... one of the founders, the other being Jack.
The fact that you don't take credit for that is, like, interesting and, I guess, cool. And also, Suits is really important to me. I don't need to get into everything, but, like, I made some sacrifices in my own life because I thought Suits was a thing worth joining. And I believe that, and it gives me a sense of purpose and accomplishment. And the fact that you were involved in its creation is very admirable. And so, you know, despite getting him in prison and losing his job, if we did bring around this bar, you're not the worst person he's ever smooched.
Is she looking directly at Tatiana?
She doesn't look at Tatiana, but it's like very obviously intentionally not looking at Tatiana.
Yeah. You know, I you were there when we were talking to Anya about my parents' case, and that was definitely one of the motivators towards creating Suits.
She nods.
I'm glad that it's important to you and that you understand what I was hoping to create. Talking to Governor Thorne made me start to question if I'd done a good thing. I still think I have, but she's a very mean lady.
Isabella says, Governor Thorne's a fascist bitch, and you really shouldn't worry too much what she has to say about you.
She is kind of hot, though, just a disembodied voice says.
No one's denied the hot part.
She is kind of hot, though, Tatiana says.
Thank you, Tati.
I would very much like for Suits to be reinstated. It may be an uphill battle, but I think it would definitely be worth the fight.
I mean, you're still going after Jack, right? And you're going to help whatever's going on in Clovenheart.
Yeah.
No matter what Governor Thorne says, it sounds like Suits is still doing what it does.
Yes.
And Ishvala says, and I officially don't have anything better to do next week, so I would happily accompany you all to Stoneloft, if that's all right.
That's fine with me. The more former Suits agents that we have with us, the merrier, right?
And Merafina actually chips in and says, I, too, would like to venture to Stoneloft with you. It appears the safety of Clovenheart lies in Stoneloft, and the safety of Clovenheart is of great interest to me. And she adds, so, perhaps, as you are my apprentice in the ways of the arcane, I am your apprentice as an agent of Suits.
I think Vellum looks very confused and maybe blushes a little bit because he's not sure how to respond to that. Like, he just kind of nods and is like, yeah, I mean, I would certainly welcome your expertise. You're a pretty badass lady, I gotta say.
Thank you. By the way, Destiny's also in this boat.
Destiny! And he scoops up Destiny and gives her a big cuddle. Lots of scritches.
I imagine Merafina's wearing, like, really, like, her robes are really kind of, like, oversized. And so, like, it, like, hangs all over to the floor a little bit. And Destiny was, like, sleeping, like, you couldn't see her until just now. She was, like, under her robes. But she, like, got up and stretched, and you could see her little paws come out of the robe. And then she came to you.
Yeah. And he gives her some little smooches on the top of her perfect little head. Yeah.
All right. So not too long after that, you all arrive in Clovenheart, park your little boats outside the Whittlesby Watermill, and everyone is assembling, you know, kind of getting out around the same time. Spar. Not that you don't have enough going on in your physical life right now, but can you flip Brawn biology as you re-enter Clovenheart?
Sure. Brawn is 3, biology is 2, which makes 5, and I'm healthy, makes 6. So that's 2 successes.
Okay. I think 2 successes means you're good. So you've gone through so much just emotionally and physically in the last like 30 hours that nothing else can hurt you, so you're fine.
I'm temporarily invincible.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you all get off the boat and you are together.
I think Spar makes sure that everybody is going to get somewhere both safe and comfortable. So making sure that if Anya is either coming with us back to the Felspar house or is going, someone will be staying with her at her place.
Yeah. Josepha is like carrying the sleeping Anya.
Good.
And she says, I will take her to the Watermill and I wanted to check on Kurt anyway. So I think I will stay there as well. I hear you are all heading to Stoneloft. one or both of you should see me tomorrow before you leave. Or whenever you leave. I don't know if it's tomorrow or technically today. I don't know when or where I am at this point. But yeah, I would talk to you. And also, oh, she said, I'll either be here or at Trader Joe's or somewhere else, but it's a pretty small town and I think you can find me.
Spar nods and says, yes, we are detectives.
This is true. Even if Suits doesn't exist, we are still detectives.
She squints her eyes and says, in that case, I will hide extra good.
Oh, gonna make it a challenge.
She departs into the watermill. And yeah, in terms of, I think obviously Marafina has her forest to return to, and I think everyone else would be going to Casa de Felspar.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else, remind me, does that include, that's all the Felspars, Vellum, Tati, is Jakob there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you guys go straight there?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Is there any talk happening on the way over?
I guess that depends a little bit on how Luna Vella is doing.
Mm.
Because she was not looking so hot at last count, right?
Yeah, and she's still, like, not. But I'll say, like, has her... No, we'll say Jakob. Jakob, like, has her on one side, and, like, Brunhilde has her, like, leaning against, like, her legs, kind of, and they're, like, guiding her across.
Mm-hmm.
She's lucid. She's just, like, creaky.
Mm-hmm.
Are we walking there, or are we taking a hover car?
It's a good question. I assumed walking, but a hover car might make more sense.
Yeah, especially if Luna Vella's not doing well, and Vellum, depending on how long that walk is, it might take even more out of him.
Yeah, do you want to say, like, because there's a few hover cars, you know, probably in this part of town.
How many people can we fit?
In a hover car? I would say comfortably four or five.
Okay.
But I think it might be nice if there's a Vellum and Spar only hover car.
Oh.
If Spar would allow such a thing.
Mm-hmm, yeah, as long as like there are folks clearly taking care of Luna.
Mm-hmm.
Spar will sort of like climb into one and lay down on the bottom of it and accept that whoever is going to drive it is going to drive it.
All right. Tati's not allowed to drive a hover car.
As soon as Brunhilde was done having big family talks, she immediately is like in like super overprotective care of Luna Vella mode. So
mm-hmm.
Good.
She is definitely watched for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then I guess Vellum will get in the car with Spar and start heading towards the Felspar's Casa de Felspar.
Can I get agility driving just to see how smooth a ride this is?
Yeah. Agility's one, driving is one for healthy, agility for body and mind. All right. We got a king and a jack, so two successes.
Yeah, what's the ride like?
I imagine that Vellum isn't taking it fast or anything. It's probably just kind of a chill ride because everyone is exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get going and are maybe out of earshot of others, he'll turn to Spar and be like, are you doing okay?
Spar takes way too long to answer is what's happening. There's like a full like 35, 40 seconds of silence. We're like, he's clearly trying to think of a way that he can answer that isn't an outright lie.
Mm-hmm. If he waits long enough, Vellum will interrupt.
Yeah. I think he's definitely not at peak capacity here.
You know, it's okay to not be okay, Felspar. And I would rather you be honest with me than lie and pretend to be okay. But I understand the impulse. And I just asked because I care. And you don't have to answer.
Spar like, sort of nudges him a little bit with his toes and says, how about I lie to you, but you know that I'm lying? Can we do that?
We can do that.
I'm doing okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
I am also doing okay.
Spar frowns. No, I don't like this game, actually.
Yeah?
Do you want to talk about?
I mean, I would love to talk about many things. Some of them are more serious. Do you want to talk when we're this tired? If not, I can just tell you about all the ideas I have for Destiny and getting her a little bed and maybe some funny little hats.
Spar sneezes.
Oh.
Weirdly, no, I think I'd want to know how you're feeling.
Spar has one thing that can hurt him.
Uh-huh.
And it's cat dander.
Uh-huh. How I'm feeling. I'm very worried and concerned about Gray's involvement. This is probably going to be alarming, so hold on to your butt, I guess.
Spark nods very seriously.
I was able to read Uncle Gray and Governor Thorne's conversation before we left. It appears that they had some sort of deal, that Gray was working with Diamond, and Thorne may be behind Jack getting kidnapped. So all of that is great, and I'm super excited to learn all of that and the implications of what that means.
What if we didn't play the lion game?
If you're sure.
Let's give it a try.
Okay. It seems that they're both after Providence and Pandemonium, and I don't know what Thorne would want with it, but it can't be anything good knowing her. I already at least have one idea of what Gray wants with it. If he's working with Diamond, I don't know how far that goes. If that means that Gray knew what was happening to Kurt or not. Thorne said that she got Jack involved because Gray got Diamond involved. And overall, I'm just, although it's not direct, I do feel like part of this is my fault, and I don't know what to do other than to try to stop things from happening, but I don't even know what things are being planned.
Spar sits up and sort of shuffles around so that he's sort of draped against Vellum as Vellum drives the hovercraft vehicle and squeezes him.
That's the correct name, everything you just said.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Yes, that's the official name, TM, TM, TM. And says, how could it be your fault? I think the only thing we can do is what we've been doing, which is work the case. But other people's actions, other people's choices aren't your fault.
You're right. It's just hard to fight that impulse sometimes.
Well, the first step is making sure that your thumb is outside your fist when you throw a punch.
Vellum takes one hand off the wheel. Do hover cars have wheels? I can't remember.
Jordan's nodding yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Sorry, it's a podcast.
And he'll make a punch and show it to Spar. He'll make a fist.
Yeah, Spar will take his hand and sort of correct the angle of his wrist.
And like you want the first two knuckles sticking out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. And then it just sort of ends up holding Vellum's hand. Mm-hmm. Sort of a like starts as a correction and then sort of fades into like, but this is mine now.
Vellum blushes and kind of looks away a little bit and then like peeks back at Spar and says, if you want to talk about things too, I'm of course happy to listen. I know everything the last couple days has been a lot for you as well.
Yeah. I guess my mom was Thaumatera.
Oh.
And also I met Krona Shava, who is kind of a dick.
Huh.
And also Aunt Luna sort of lied to me. And I guess now I guess I'm not really human, but I'm going to live as long as a human lives.
Oh.
Which is probably fine, right? That's like a regular, plenty of people live, like you probably are going to live as long as a human lives, right? Like that's a thing people do all the time.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully. What caused this change?
Well, Luna used the radio to summon Krona Shava, I guess. And I don't know how magic stuff works. But I was a ghost. They were a ghost.
Your sword was a ghost.
Sword was also a ghost, and my mom. My mom is a sword that's a ghost.
That's also a goddess.
Yeah, which I don't know what that means for me in Sorrel, because no one will tell me. And every time I'm like, hello, my precious aunts who raised me and who I regard as parents, are there any other family secrets I should know about? They say, no, my darling, dearest nephew, who is like a son who we have raised. There are no other family secrets that could possibly upend your life and or have an impact on this ongoing investigation. And, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on you once more, but fool me thrice. And perhaps I really am not cut out for this life of a detective.
Well, being a detective, it's easy to observe and criticize and pick apart people that we don't know. It's more difficult when it's people close to us. If there was a third time, I would not blame you for it. I've certainly been fooled a couple times by Gray myself recently.
What?
What is it?
Back in Cinder Shore, Vellum told Spar that Gray wants to use the deck to bring Vellum's parents back, I'm pretty sure, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Do you... If we find the deck that's also a goddess kind of... Would you want to use that?
No. I understand that it may have many good, useful cards in it, but the few that we've encountered have been alarming, to say the least, and I don't know that we could destroy it, considering what happened last time with the card at Anya's house, but it seems a great deal more dangerous than potentially helpful, in my opinion.
Even if it could bring your parents back?
Like you said before, I don't know if magic works that way. If it could bring them back and everything was great and like it used to be, that would be wonderful. But at the same time, we wouldn't really know until we tried it whether what they got brought back as would really be them. Would they have been changed through being brought back? Would they be resentful for being brought back? I don't know what the afterlife is like, if there is an afterlife.
Could be some Buffy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, I can't imagine how strange and alarming it would be to be in this world again after so many years. They wouldn't recognize me. They may not even recognize Gray, considering how much they've changed. And would they feel like they have a place in this world? And I wouldn't want to give them that sort of existential crisis either.
So if Gray gets the deck
and they get brought back, what then?
Well, hopefully the step before that, what do you want to do if Gray gets to it before we do?
It's not going to be easy no matter what. Whether if we get it first and I keep it from them, if they get to it first and I try to stop them, I don't know if I can get them to listen to my side of things, considering how obsessed they seem to be with this idea. Granted, I've not loved and lost in the same way that she has, but I don't know, I feel like there's too many things that could go wrong than could go right.
What I'm trying not to ask is if
it comes down to it, would we fight Gray?
If you can't, would you want me to?
I think I might need you to.
I can do that.
I'm gonna cry. Also, I just want to say that at this point, definitely either you guys are parked outside the Felsfar residence or Vellum is like circling the house.
Mm-hmm. I think they're definitely like parked outside and it's gotta be dawn at least, like sort of starting to lighten.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, we hadn't really gotten a chance to talk about this in particular yet. But Felspar, he looks at Spar very seriously.
Spar looks alarmed.
I care about you a great deal. And if you would be interested, I would be interested in taking you out on a date. If that is not something you're interested in, let me know. And I'll figure it out.
Spar sticks his hand out for a handshake and says, yes, Agent Vellum, I would be amenable to being taken out on a date.
Vellum smiles, big and cheesy, just like he used to when he was little.
Does he take Spar's hand or does he leave him hanging?
He takes Spar's hand, yes.
It's a good firm handshake.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm losing my shit over how like deep the conversation was and how not normal at all what just happened was, and I'm loving it so much.
You say that as if this isn't something that I, SAF, personally done in my life.
Which part?
V sticking a hand out and shaking very seriously on, yes, aww, let us go on a recreational date. Spar uses that to pull Vellum to his feet. And Spar hugs Vellum.
Oh, Vellum will hug back.
And sort of rests against him for a minute and then says, I have to do something before I go to sleep. Do you want me to draw you a bath and help you get set up? Or do you want to come with me?
Do you want company?
Well, don't tell Sorrel this. But I am not a praying man.
Oh?
And after taking a life, after killing someone, I think it's important to mark that. And technically, not even technically, you struck the killing blow on Veracity. So if you would like to observe with me, there would be a place for you there if that's something you wanted. It's also, I don't know, religion is stupid and observances are personal and it's...
I'll come.
Okay. Spar steps out of the hover car and hands Vellum down from it as if from a carriage, like steadies him by the hand and elbow. And there are probably like shrine spaces in the Felspar house, but Spar leads Vellum to like a little spot around the back of the house where there are like maybe a little bit of wood piled up, like maybe some flat stones where it's like.
Okay, I'd have to say on the way around back, you definitely see two hover cars parked out front. And one of them, like Ishbala is like half leaned out of one, just asleep.
Oh.
And Spar, you would know that Ishbala will sleep in the weirdest places. And this is very normal and she should not be disturbed.
Okay, good. Her spine's going to be okay. This is an okay thing for a crocodilian spine to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I also want to add that Ishbala's definitely told you it's fine for crocodilian spines. I don't know that Spar would know with certainty whether it's true.
Well, how good is she at walking the next day?
She seems fine.
So Spar leads Vellum around the back of the house, passing Ishbala, who's like slumped half out of her hover car. Does she snore? Tell me that she snores. Little crocodilian.
She definitely snores, yeah.
Ugh, cute.
Because it's got to like whistle out through her little like front TVs.
Yeah.
And in the back, there's a space that looks like it may or may not be intentionally a sort of like prayer altar space, unclear, plausible deniability space. And Spar kneels in front of it and will help Vellum down if he wants help.
Yeah, he'll take a hand.
And Spar, from like inside a pocket that's like quite, that's like closer to his skin. It's something he wears like very, very close. He has a very small icon of Sangreno, which is the goddess of blood and wounds in battle, and is a sort of like not death as like dry decay, but death as like the kill shot. And he props that up against the sort of flat surface, and then and like that part, he sort of that's sort of regular and goes smoothly, right? Like he leans the tiny little icon up against his pack of cigarettes, and then sort of hesitates, and unsheathes his sword and balances that kind of behind the icon setup, and sort of glances at Vellum and then at the sword, and is clearly a little awkward. Like this is not part of the ritual as he usually observes. And then takes off his watch and sets that up as well. And he sort of shrugs a little bit and indicates, it feels weird to leave Falmaterra out of this, I guess, and would be rude not to. He sort of gestures. Kronoshava clearly does not want to say, like, to honor, to pray to acknowledge. He's just kind of skipping over what it is exactly he's doing.
Is there anyone else we should invoke?
Is there anyone you would like to acknowledge?
I think Velum would like to acknowledge Suelena.
Oh.
You know, maybe he's thinking about his parents more right now and hoping that they are resting well.
Oh.
So maybe he'll pick up some dirt and, I don't know, maybe breathe on it a little bit and then put it next to the other items.
Yeah, so Sangreno is more like a dying in battle associated with, like, blood, wounds, etc. And Suelena is more like death, rest, and renewal.
I think Spar stands and, like, rests a hand briefly on Velum's shoulder in a, like, I'll be right back sort of gesture, and goes rattling through, like, the wood piles and comes back with, like, a small animal bone.
Oh.
And sets it on the pile of dirt.
Okay.
And he plucks a couple of cigarettes out of the pack, and he pulls his, like, a little pocket knife out of his pocket and pricks his thumb and smears the blood on one of the cigarettes and sets that in front of the Sangreno icon.
Mm-hmm.
And sets just regular cigarettes in front of the sword and the watch. He doesn't have anything special because these are not goddesses he usually worships. So he doesn't really have a sort of a set offering. And then he does the same also for Suelena.
Velum looks at the bloodied cigarette and asks, should I as well?
Spar shrugs. Observance is personal. I kind of think your blood should stay inside, just given how things have gone, but it's traditional.
Velum will take the knife. It's just a couple drops and it'll burn away. I'm not too worried.
Spar takes the knife back from Velum and holds his hand out so that he can cradle Velum's hand in his.
Okay.
And then pricks Velum's thumb in, like, the same spot that he did his own.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, a very gentle and, like, the smallest possible prick.
Aw.
With a good sharp knife.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So do you guys light the cigarettes?
Mm-hmm.
Do we take turns lighting different ones?
Oh, yeah. How's it work?
Like, maybe Spar does Sangreno and Thaumaterra, and Velum does Kronoshava and Suelena.
Yeah, like if we start at opposite ends of the space and sort of meet in the middle.
Yeah, I like that.
Spar, this does not normally happen, what I'm about to describe.
Oh, good.
As Suelena's is lit, the flame is like a light brown color, which is the color associated with that goddess. And when Sangreno's is lit, the flame is a deep red.
Mm-hmm.
And when Thaumaterra's is lit, the flame is pink.
Mm-hmm.
And when Kronosava's is lit, the flame is green.
Spar nudges Velum and leans in, like, sort of stage whispering as if someone might overhear. And he says, just quick question.
Mm-hmm.
That's not regular fire colors, right? I'm not seeing things. Those are goddess colors?
There are indeed goddess colors in those flames.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. No, that's worse, actually. I think that's worse, actually.
I see. Velum will take Spar's hand and give it a squeeze.
Spar squeezes back, and then he sort of glances around to see if anything else is weird, like anyone has decided to appear on an astral plane or anything.
No, not this time.
All right. And then he bows his head and he does not say his prayers out loud.
Okay.
Velen will similarly bow his head and think some prayers. Still holding Spar's hand.
I think Spar definitely waits for the cigarettes to burn all the way down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then cleans up. And he puts the icon back in an inner pocket and straps his watch back on and his sword. Mm-hmm.
I also want to say, like, the cigarette smells less like tobacco and more like incense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As different, like, four different incense?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Spar mutters something like, I really hope that I didn't accidentally become a priest.
Oops. I hate when I accidentally become a member of the clergy.
You know? I don't know. He's become an unbecome weirder shit on this day, so.
It's giving me some Hadrian worshipping Samat instead of Samothy's vibes. Oh, it's so good.
He takes the bone, the small bone that he had plucked out and found for Velum, and he puts it in Velum's hand.
Velen will keep it in his pocket, a different pocket than the cherry coke remedy.
Do y'all head inside afterward?
Yeah.
Inside, Jakob has passed out on the couch, despite there definitely having been beds available. Aww. And, like, his shoes are still on. Like, it's clear, like, he, like, came in. He's, like, face down.
Spar kneels and starts untying Jakob's shoes.
Aww. He is awake for, like, a second, but, like, doesn't really say anything. Yeah. He just acknowledges.
Spar pats the back of his calf and tells him to go back to sleep.
Actually, in the kitchen, on the counter, there's a candle lit. And next to it, Sorrel is sitting there. Mm-hmm. And you know that she journals often, and she's doing that right now. Mm-hmm. And Tatiana is also there. You actually think she's, like, asleep, like, sitting on, like, a stool and, like, asleep against the counter. But she actually, like, gets up and starts scribbling on a piece of paper when you guys enter. And she, like, kind of acknowledges you.
Nobody here is sleeping in a bed.
And, two of them aren't even asleep. And Sorrel looks at Spar for a long time, like she wants to say something, but then decides, like, I can probably wait, and doesn't say anything. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. Do the boys head to bed together?
After Spar gets Jakob's shoes off and puts a blanket over him and shoves a, like, half lifts him for a second to shove a pillow under his head. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But does leave him sort of sprawled belly down, like, yeah, he'll figure his shit out or he won't. Yeah. Spar will check with Tati and say, hey, do you need a room or sheets or anything? I'm sure we have.
Oh, a bed would be great.
Yeah, I can do that.
Thank you.
And he goes and pulls bed linens out of where they've been for the past 30 years. And mm-hmm. we've talked a little bit before about Casa del Felspar being like a sprawling sort of ranch style. Mm-hmm. And so he nudges like one of the doors of what should be a guest room open and makes sure it's still a guest room and there's a bed in there. Uh-huh. And makes the bed for her.
Okay. As you pass through the hall, you definitely hear like whispering coming from the aunt's room, so you know that they're in there, but mm-hmm. yeah. Yep, Tati goes to bed. Sorrel tells you, like, hey, I'm gonna stay up for a little while longer, but mm-hmm. I haven't had a crazy adventure today, so you two should probably rest.
Hmm. I mean, there's still time left in the day.
Yeah, you know? I may not have had a crazy adventure, but I do have a lot to document in this journal. Mm-hmm. Dear Diary, today I found out my mom was a goddess. Oh, does he know about that?
I never believed it would happen to me. You're probably wondering how I ended up here. Velum nods.
Spar shrugs and says, well, if he didn't before, he does now.
Me and my silly mouth.
And then he takes Phelim's hand and pulls him towards the bedroom.
Phelim goes.
You definitely hear a whisper. Porking your partner.
He flips her off.
Two of you head to bed?
Mm-hmm.
What's that like?
I think Spar is still kind of in host mode a little bit. and asks Phelim, do you want me to dry you a bath? Do you want a shower? And what? Because Phelim's got like a wound, right? Like maybe on his arm. Is that right?
That sounds right. Yeah, from Thorn's halberd, spear.
Yeah, spear.
Something. Yeah.
You also did get a bite in the neck from Veracity.
Yeah, okay. So you're probably still a little grimy.
Yeah, a bath would be great, honestly.
All right. So Spar goes to the nearest bathroom and like starts drawing a bath for Phelim, and is sort of like doing that thing where when you're exhausted and you can't quite figure out the right sequence of things. So like he takes off one shoe. Makes it a few steps, takes off the other shoe, is still wearing like all of his holsters and his sword. Gets to the bathroom, starts rolling up his sleeves, starts running the water, and then like takes his belt off. It's a very strange sequence of undressing.
Good. When it's ready, I think Phelim will look at Spar and say, do you want to join me?
Spar makes a face that's clearly like, this is not in the manual. And he says, I'll stay with you.
Okay.
And he undresses to like his underwear and his undershirt and sort of like half curls up against the side of the tub. Oh. Right. So he's sort of like leaning like the picture I have in mind is like a Waterhouse painting, or like a Pre-Raphaelite, right? Where you've got like someone resting gently, like head pillowed on their hands, like up against.
Aww, yeah.
Phelim petting his hair.
And Spar will like rouse enough to like wash Phelim's back or like help wash his hair, so that he doesn't, and help like make sure his wounds get clean and properly rebandaged, and. From the undershirt, Phelim can probably see that, like, quote unquote, new, the changed Stark scar on his chest.
Mm-hmm. I think at one point he reaches out a little bit towards it, but doesn't make contact because he isn't sure.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "Are you okay?"
I guess I will be. When I was little, when I was young, the reason Merafina did biomancy on me is because I was sick. I don't know if they even still have it or what it's called. We called it fire tree fever. And some people got better from it and some people didn't. And I wasn't getting better. I was getting worse. So Spar takes off his undershirt, sort of giving implicit permission for Phelim to touch. And it's like a shiny raised scar that almost looks like a lightning pattern or almost a little bit like tree roots. Okay. It's sort of like a tangled, gnarled. And it's raised and it's red as if it's a fresh scar. And he says, I guess this is the scar that was left from, I don't know if it was the fever or the biomancy. I've always had it. It's just never been. I mean, it's like the sort of scar you get when you're four. It's not like this.
Phelim will touch it gently. I'm glad that that you got better and that I got to meet you.
Spar takes his hand and kisses it.
Vellum takes Spar's hand and kisses it.
Yo.
Does that seem like a good ending place?
I think so.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm really glad we recorded this episode. It was so good.
Yeah.
It was so gay.
This one. Very gay.
Yeah. We've never been gayer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we'd be hard pressed to find gayer content on our show.
Mm-hmm. I believe in us, though. We can do it.
Yeah,
we
for
can
sure.
do it. It's a challenge.
You know, this is a new gay peak, but there are higher mountains to climb.
Mm.
Yes.
Three of Hearts is S.A. Monik Tola as Agent Felspar and our primary editor, Ila Alexi as Agent Vellum and our artist, and Jordan Quiverns as our host. We play a game called Space Kings, created by Kevin Cole and Super Tri Studios. You can purchase the game at spacekings.space. Our intro music is Dogtective. Our mintro theme is At Last, a Piano. And our outro is Ghost plus Guest. All of these tracks are by Louis Zong, and they can be found at louiszong.bandcamp.com. We also have a Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/threeheartscast, all spelled out, that is T-H-R-E-E, heartscast. Support us for any price you can afford, and receive access to all perks, including gag reels, and to the opportunity to have an NPC named after you, as well as bonus episodes and written stories set in the world of our podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Hey everyone, this is Jordan. You've reached the end of the episode. Unless.
Tragically, that is extremely not the tone for this information.
No, it's so not the tone. Sorry, I've misled you. There's a flashback we recorded originally for the beginning of the episode. We're moving it to the end. It's pretty heavy. I'll just tell you what it's about. It's Spar, young Spar, 7 years old, seeing his parents for the last time. So obviously the mood is pretty dour. It's sad stuff involving a kid. That's not your thing. It's not important to listen to. It just adds like some context to the conversation at the beginning of the episode, but not really even. Like, you know everything already. If you want to see it play out, keep listening to the podcast. And if you don't, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye. Essay.
Jordan.
What was Spar doing when he was about 7 years old the last time he saw his parents?
So he's 7, so that makes Sorrel, what, 12?
Mm-hmm.
What time of day do you think that they would be leaving?
I think late afternoon, and I think specifically you're not near your parents when the scene starts.
Okay. Let's see, late afternoon, probably like playing, probably with Sorrel. Maybe out in Clovenheart, like in one of the common green areas, I imagine. He is playing with, he has a stick. He's pretending he's a little sword.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing a game about like, they're going off and they're going to fight the big bad. And the big bad is like, I don't know, one of Hildy's cow giraffe awful things, right? It's like, like one of the cows that is like supremely unbothered by the small children, mm-hmm. like running circles and shrieking.
I love it. I love it. So you're probably like, okay, so you're probably like right out, like right around like Casa de Felspar?
Yeah. Like in the extended lawn area.
Okay. That sounds good. So Sorrel is like trying to read a book, but Spar keeps like pulling her into the game in one way or another. And she's game with it. Like she's not trying to rebuke him or anything, but she is, you know, she's trying to make as many excuses as possible to leave the game and go back to her book.
Mm-hmm.
But is not being rude about it. Mm-hmm. You see, walking up the path to Cassidy Felspar, Felix, Tara, and Jasper. Tara's never been on screen before. Could you describe Tara for the audience?
I think Tara has been on screen, right? Because with the flashback?
That was from her perspective.
Okay, sure. So let's see. So Tara's a human. She is a little bit shorter than Felix, who is more elfy. And I think she has dark skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so like Spar gets more of his skin tone from her than he does from Felix.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she moves with a kind of energy where like you just know. You see her and like people are drawn to her and people want to follow her. And like mm-hmm. she just feels like somebody who can do things, right? Like mm-hmm. she's got that sort of like vivaciousness, that sort of life of the party sparkle.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. And she's definitely walking with that energy now as she approaches Casa de Felspar. Felix looks like uncharacteristically withdrawn as they follow behind. Jasper looks in some way perturbed as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, as they pass the two of you, Tara stops and turns to you and says, Marim, Sorrel? And then she like kind of, you saw like she got lost in her thought for a second too, and she pulls herself out and says, hey kids, how you doing?
I think even that young Spark can like feel that something's up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he hesitates a minute and then is like, good. And is like kind of looking at Sorrel for cues yeah. about like what might be wrong.
And you see Sorrel like also like searching the parents for like, you know, ideas as well
mm-hmm.
for hints. And Tara says, do you mind telling us where Brunhilde and Lunavala got off to?
I think they're down in the town center. Spar looks at Sorrel. I think they just left a little while ago.
Yeah, Sorrel nods in agreement. And Tara says, all right. Well, Mama and Zaza gotta go talk to them. But Jasper is here. Jasper's in charge right now. And Sorrel. Listen to what they say, Marim. And we gotta go talk to your aunts and we'll be back in a jiffy.
And Tiny Spark nods very seriously and his very curly hair kind of flops in his face. I've mentioned this a little bit, right? Like the Casa del Felspar is like kind of a rotating hub of the resistance. And so like,
yeah.
he's pretty, it's like pretty normal to have like an adult pointed out and be like, okay, this one's in charge. And he always, always, always listens to Sorrel.
So Tara takes like kind of a knee and ruffles Bart's hair and says, thank you, my good boy.
And he hugs her.
Okay. She kisses him on the head. And yeah. She and Felix head off into town. I'll say they're gone for 2+ hours. What is Spar up to during that time?
I think he doesn't want to play anymore after that. And so I think he probably like asks Sorrel to read her book to him. And it doesn't really matter what it's about or like he pretends that he understands. Whatever it is. I imagine she's reading like something having to do with magical studies.
Yeah, yeah.
And he pretends to understand. And like pretends to be reading along.
Yeah. And I think Sorrel picks up on that, but is totally indulging him.
And then since it was already late afternoon, I think food, dinner.
Yeah.
And then maybe he's putting off getting ready for bed as late as possible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like he will let Jasper and or Sorrel like help him, you know, take a bath, brush his teeth and like get into bed.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like sitting at the kitchen table drawing and like yawning into his tiny little fists and like trying to stay awake until Mama and Zaza come back.
Yeah. And I don't think Sorrel and Jasper be trying to put him to bed either. I think Jasper makes dinner. They're not that much older than Sorrel. Like maybe like 13 at this point, but you know, they're pretty good at like baking and cooking. So you get a very like hodgepodge dinner of like a salad and like some muffins or something that, that they could throw together.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, Felix and Tara and Lunavella and Brunhilde all arrive back. Immediately, like Felix and Tara go to you. They ask Jasper if he can like have the room with just the two of you. And they kind of each take you one at a time. So like Tara goes up and like talks to Sorrel, like kind of quietly one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And Felix approaches Spar and they say, hey bud, hey, what have you, how is it with Jasper and Sorrel?
And he's like kind of squirming a little because like he knows something's wrong, but he doesn't really know how to ask what's wrong. And so he like is kind of looking down. He says it was good. Jasper made muffins.
They like glance at the muffins and smile and say, I'm sure they're delicious.
They're okay.
They say, I won't tell them that. And they say, hey, I'm sorry that we're freaking you out. Tomorrow morning, your mom and I have to head out of town. Hopefully only for a couple of days. And it kills us. We've talked about this a lot. It's what we've been talking about. And I'm really sorry. It pains me that even here in Clovenheart, you have to be so aware of the war. But you're a really strong kid, Merrim. And I know you can handle it. And I know that your aunties are going to take good care of you. And we'll be back before you know it.
Can we come with you?
No, I'm sorry. We're going somewhere. It's not safe. We're going actually to my home and Lunavella's home, Vasa Natura.
Spar looks kind of on the verge of tears and like he's clearly trying hard not to cry.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little bit of a losing battle. Like we got like a wobbling lip situation. And he says, if it's dangerous, why do you have to go? Is it, will we be okay?
Yeah. I mean, we've done danger before and we've been okay. I don't see why this should be any different. And you feel Tara's hand on your shoulder. She kind of like lifts you out of the chair and like is kind of crouched on the ground so she can hug you.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, Merrim, I don't know what Zaza just said, but Zaza's home is in danger. And some people that we love are in danger. And we might be the only people who can help them. And I don't want to leave you. We came to Clovenheart so that we could all be safe together. But one day you might want to leave Clovenheart. You might not want to stay here forever. There's a whole world out there. If they're anything like me, then you're going to want to explore. And I want to make sure that world out there is as safe for you as possible.
Spar sets his tiny little jaw. And says, I want to help. I can help.
And I know you will. But right now, the best thing you can do to help is be here. Be good for your aunties and be good for Sorrel, because if you're out there, I'm going to be too worried about you. And I need to worry about keeping myself safe so that I can come home for you.
25 years later, Spar will give this exact speech to Anya.
I know. Oh. This wasn't an accident.
Spar looks back and forth. Have his parents gone out on any other missions that have been sort of this serious or like where the mood has been this heavy?
I don't think so. I think that they've tried to be more or less retired ever since Spar got sick and they brought him to Clovenheart. So that's been about 2 years ago. So I think they've mostly tried to assist in the war, like without leaving Clovenheart, however they can.
Mm-hmm. So I think Spar looks back and forth between them and he says, I'm scared.
And Tara says, I'm sorry. I know we were gonna, I knew you might be, but nothing to worry about because we're family and we'll always be with you, you know. And Tara reaches onto her back where her sword is kept and unbuckles it and says, I know this is a little big for you right now, but, you know, there's a part of me in this sword. I made this sword. I have others, don't worry. But as long as this is near you, I'll always be with you, Marim. I promise you that. And she goes to hug Marim real tight. And over her shoulder, in like the living room, you see Brunhilde, who looks really shell-shocked.